Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Wednesday, the 1st of February, recording at 7:46 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. First, the highlights here of the day. Japan's rally stalled. Well, actually, it had stalled in the two previous days, but we had a bit of a dip in here today. Probably not too serious here, given that the banks index held up reasonably well, and so did the TSE 2, the second section index. But I'm running a pretty tight stop on this, so I'm not giving it much leeway. Tight in the money stop on my trading position there. That was supposed to be highlights here. Elsewhere in Asia, little bit mixed. Singapore testing its high. That's important and covered in the comment of the day. Interesting charts. Bonds drifting here a little bit. They had lost some downside momentum. I'm talking about government bond futures now. They had lost some downside momentum following some sharp weakness. They steadied up a bit, but again, under a little bit of pressure here today. It's still basically a weak sector. I'll come back to that. Could be important. Elsewhere, highlights. Dollars firm in here. Precious metals. They weakened early in the day. Well, actually, they were weak for most of the day. And then we saw gold recover. And we saw platinum recover to just about unchanged, to a small rise, I think, for platinum. And the declines in other metals pared back quite a bit here. So it looks like an interday consolidation. Oil. Now, this is important, and I don't know what the news item is for this, but there's got to be something out there. But crude oil had run up to $69 a barrel in the morning, and it's currently trading at $66.40, from $69 to $66.40. That's down $1.52 on the day, reversing a good gain. So we're going to get a big outside day on this. And natural gas is over a dollar off its high. It had rallied up to, I'm looking at the March contract now, it had been very strong, up over 500 points, up to 982.20, and has fallen all the way back to 8.760. I'm sorry, I don't know what the cause of that was, but there's bound to be some news item. I'm just going to put up the Bloomberg News here and see if there's any mention of that, but they're not too quick to pick up on the commodity stuff. I do not see anything. I don't believe it's the weather, because that showed weather actually cooling, which had been one of the factors helping to push them higher. Right. Okay, let's go back now and say, what about these stock markets? Well, oil is one of the key variables here. And, I mean, we could see it with today's action on Wall Street when oil was up close to the $69 level at Wall Street. As it rallied up to that level, Wall Street pared back gains, although it never moved to the minus side, and it's rallied again as the oil prices come off. And I think this will probably be, this action will be greeted with a sigh of relief in Asia tomorrow. So the stock market rallies are still intact here. That is an important point. But oil remains a key variable here. In my view, we're just getting some backing and filling beneath the Katrina highs, and we will see oil move up, and not just slightly above the Katrina highs. I expect to see at least $80 a barrel at some point this year. And it would not take much in the way of a fright here to cause that to occur relatively quickly. But that has not happened in here today. We've had the opposite, an outside day on the downside. So that's good for stock markets. The other thing that stock markets have to worry about is, or another thing that they have to worry about, and if this sounds like wall of worry department here, we really do need to be aware of these Achilles heels that the stock market cycle has, and that's the long-dated government bonds. There's upward pressure on yields. We've seen that over the last more than 2 weeks. And if that continues, and we take out last year's reaction lows, they're not all that far away in some instances. JGBs, for instance, they would probably lead the way down. That would not cause a crisis of confidence, I don't think, in Japan, not initially at any rate. Japan's going to get a medium-term correction of its strong gains that it saw last year at some stage, but it would be a warning that other government bond markets were going to break down. In other words, yields push up, and that I think would create a very, very strong headwind for global stock markets and tip them into that correction that I am expecting for this year. But that hasn't happened yet. We're just identifying the areas that need to be watched. And the other one is gravity, combination of gravity and long in the tooth rally in here, although a rising market can defy gravity for a very, very long time. And also there is, well, there are some good cyclical reasons to expect a correction this year. Probably I've earmarked that period as second to third quarter of the year, and that's a guess, of course. There are no knowers out there who know for sure what's going to happen, but that's tied in very much with the US electoral cycle. I know this is old ground for the veteran subscribers, but let me make a big welcome to all the new subscribers who've been coming in. And you might have heard this in some of my other audios as well, but it's a point worth repeating here that the second year of the US presidential cycle, and in this case, that is, of course, 2006, is the least profitable year on Wall Street historically, if you look out over the last 100 years or so. And particularly during the last 70 years or so. Okay, so those are the things that we need to be aware of. Now, there's a good checkpoint which you can monitor on the charts in the library. What we don't need to lose sleep at night over these concerns because stock markets still have their upward momentum. They are still in form, in form, in other words. But watch those reaction lows that we saw last month. Now, they're not all that far away and they're not under pressure. I'm not aware, certainly no important market is pressuring those levels. Maybe a couple of minor emerging markets that I've overlooked, or small emerging markets, I should say, that I've overlooked recently, maybe testing those levels. But that's not what counts in terms of the whole overall global trend. And while markets are not pressuring, let alone not violating those reaction lows that we saw last month, I don't have any problem with the overall momentum, meaning that the path of least resistance in the short and perhaps medium term, defined as at least a few weeks, remains on the upside. So, that's it on stock markets, and I've already covered the government bonds. They look a bit vulnerable in here. The US dollar, now you know my view, I feel that the dollar peaked, and I'll use the dollar index as my reference point, that it peaked in November, and that it's going to get a ranging decline. Now, why a ranging decline? Because that's what usually happens in currencies anyway, but there's an even better reason than that, and which we could label as coincidence. And the interest rate differentials are the factor because they still favor the US dollar. US interest rates are continuing to rise. The Fed definitely did not indicate that rates had reached a peak. So here we are with the federal funds rate at 4.5%, and I think it's pretty well guaranteed that we get another quarter point increase, barring some sort of big accident in the markets, which is not certainly not pending in here today. And I think that, would they actually stop at 4.75%? I mean, mostly people have round numbers in mind, and my guess is that they've kind of penciled in 5% as a level where they would pause and reassess, all things being equal. And by all things being equal, I mean, and no dramatic changes either in financial markets or in economic data. So that interest rate cycle, as I say, still favors the dollar. But after last year's good year and the technical deterioration that we've seen this year against that background of typically bullish forecasts towards year-end 2005, just the opposite of what we saw at year-end 2004, when everybody was talking their book and short of the dollars as it was bottoming out to move upwards. Most people were long of the dollar and talking it up at year-end 2005. So again, ranging, we could see the dollar rally a little bit further in here, but I do feel it's gradually on its way back down to 80 on the US dollar index. That's down near the historic lows. Okay, moving on to the precious metals. This is a very powerful bull market in here, and the analysts who look at these things, write about them from the various different investment banking and broking houses, have pretty much to a man, woman, been behind the curve here on events. In other words, the typical comment is that you get somebody saying, "Well, I'm bullish, but it's already filled my, or it's already above my average price for the year, so I'm looking for a correction." That's the type of language, if we use our little bit of our behavioral psychology in here, that's the type of language you get when people recognize that it's the obvious that something is in a major trend, that it really does look different to all those furtive failed rallies. And there weren't that many of those that we saw for about 21 years following the 1980 peak in the price of gold. In other words, a long secular. And I had an email on secular today. I mean, as in very long term, obviously. I don't mean it in the religious sense. So, as I say, these analysts have been behind the curve in terms of developments, and they keep playing catch up, which is means that they raise their targets because the market gets so far above their target levels, and that means that for mining companies that they raise their earnings forecasts because they were previously basing them on expectations for much lower prices. Now, the classic example of that right now, really classic example, is nickel. And the nickel price is pushing higher. You can see that on the charts, and it's had a 2 year plus consolidation. That's because it ran ahead too quickly. And then it spills over and gets a major consolidation. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen to zinc, for instance, this year, because zinc has seen a saw spectacular advance last year, and it's continuing to rise, still rising right now. So it's getting ahead of itself. And Owen put up that report about how there's plenty of potential scope for substitution when zinc moves ahead too quickly. People will use aluminium instead for many of the industrial needs. The get back to nickel and Inco, the company I'm thinking of in this instance, where I have a long position, a spread bet long position, and I've mentioned it on a number of occasions. And Inco is a stock that I will also be adding before too very long to my investment portfolio as well. But the point here is that the prices that people are using in terms of Inco are just a whole lot lower than where we are here today. And as a result of this, there will be some dramatic increases in earnings estimates. And I expect that price of nickel, you have to look it up in the library. I don't have a perfect, I have a good image of what the chart pattern actually looks like, but in terms of those exact highs. But I mentioned this 2-year consolidation. I can't name all the price levels, but let me stop waffling here and saying we're seeing a 2-year plus consolidation. The price is moving from the bottom of that consolidation to the higher side of that consolidation, where I expect it to pause briefly before surging on into new high ground. Why should it do that? Well, because of the very, very strong demand. And I expect that to happen this year, and when that does happen, we will get the most dramatic upward revisions of earnings estimates for Inco, which has a free world, Western world, monopoly control over the nickel price. The other big producer, of course, is in Russia. But that makes Inco a key position as far as I'm concerned looking forward here. It's one that's lagged well behind for the reasons that I've mentioned. Now, to a greater or lesser extent, that's been mostly to a lesser extent, that's been the situation that we've seen with mining companies throughout. Analysts are finding that they've got to ratchet up their earnings expectations because they underestimated the strength of the metals during this secular, as in very long-term, bull market. As we've said over and over again, it's a classic case of supply inelasticity meets rising demand, one of the key fuller money themes over the last 3 years or more. Now, that's the good news. The bad news on these mining companies is that costs are also soaring. So they or analysts are having to allow for that as well. And when I say their costs, I mean all of the costs that they have in terms of the steel that they need for mines, the other equipment they need in terms of the fuels they need to of course to mine and refine these metals, in terms of skilled management and workers to operate the mines should they wish to expand. And all these costs are rising. They can't get the large tires for the earth-moving equipment. There are delays on the delivery of the big dump trucks, so on. So you've got a scarcity problem there in terms of qualified personnel and the delivery mechanisms that they use, that they need for these mine developments. So all of those costs are rising. And that, of course, has been a major factor deterring aggressive mining output or aggressive additional development of mine production capacity by these firms. Now, so therefore, they're unwilling to step up to the plate and to risk all that capital on developmental costs. They're proceeding much, much more closely, more slowly, I mean. They're proceeding much, much more slowly with their mine expansion, which keeps the supply tight, and with demand being unrelenting, that pushes the metal price up even further. So this is a virtuous circle for mining companies right now, which is one of the reasons why I like them so much and why they've done so well in the markets. But the sting in the tail here is that when mining companies get, I beg your pardon, when metal prices, let me say that again, when metal prices get a major cyclical correction, I don't think it'll be the end of the secular bull market, but let's take the example of zinc. That if that gets a 2-year consolidation, such as we've seen for nickel, that would have a very adverse effect on companies that were mining that metal. So as long as the metal prices are pushing higher, this is a virtuous circle still for the mining companies. They're not spending as much as they might otherwise because of those high costs, so they're not incurring all those high development costs, but they're still making loads of money and getting inflation in earnings as a result of being able to sell what they are producing at higher levels. If the metal prices fall, then they're still saddled with the high costs on programs to which they've committed themselves, and they will, of course, not be getting the same amount of revenue for the metal that they're actually selling. Therefore, and I apologize if I've gone on too long on this point, therefore, the mines should be thought of as the equivalent of a derivative on the actual metal price. In other words, the mines are more risky and more volatile. That's why I prefer the futures. That's why I like the futures most of all. Unless something gets seriously out of whack, such as Inco, or unless you have big companies like Rio Tinto and BHP Billiton, which are in my investment portfolio, where I really regard those as being mining funds. But if I want a really well-managed mining fund, then I have something like the Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust, which is my biggest leverage position at the moment. Okay, well, I'm running on too long here on all of this, but well, we'll have more tomorrow, won't we? All the best.